The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. John was standing with two of his disciples, and as he watched Jesus walk by, he said, "Behold the Lamb of God." The two disciples heard what he said and followed Jesus. Jesus turned and saw them following him and said to them, "What are you looking for?" They said to him, "Rabbi," which translated means teacher, "where are you staying?" He said to them, "Come and you will see." So they went and saw where Jesus was staying, and they stayed with him that day. It was about 4 in the afternoon. Andrew, the brother of Simon Peter, was one of the two who heard John and followed Jesus. He first found his own brother Simon and told him, "We have found the Messiah," which is translated Christ. Then he brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, the son of John. You will be called Cephas," which is translated Peter. The Gospel of the Lord. There are three concepts that we can discern and pray about today from our readings. The first is God's subtlety in our lives. The second is the proper purpose of different things. And lastly, the concept of invitation. So, in that first reading from Samuel, we actually heard that this past Wednesday. And it's a beautiful representation of the way that God subtly reveals himself to people. Now, for the majority of us, most likely, this is going to be our reality, that God's going to just quietly be prompting us and poking at us and like saying little things, and we're going to be like, okay, a little confused, trying to figure out who's really talking, and maybe go to someone and ask for some insight, and finally, there'll be this revelation that, oh, it's God speaking. I just need to respond like, "Here I am, Lord. I'm listening." You know, occasionally, not very often, but occasionally you get that, like, those lightning bolt moments, right? It's like, bam, boom, got it, God, locked in. Okay, that's not the case here. So God, as a lesson for us to all learn, is one who reveals himself subtly. Within that, it's recognizing that as he subtly reveals himself, it's not in our time, our concept, it's in his time, his plan. And discernment of our own lives is very similar, where if we look back most often, we can start to see God's fingerprints on everything. We start to see his involvement. In the moment, it's hard to see that sometimes. And I equated it on Wednesday to the idea of a puzzle. So I'm just curious, like, how many have ever put a puzzle together? Okay, so most of us. If you've never put a puzzle together, that's fine. But I think you should still get this concept. How many of you like putting puzzles together? How many don't? Okay. And yet, that is what life is about, really. Life is a series of puzzles. Now, here's an even more intriguing question. When you put the puzzle together, how many start with the border? Who starts not with the border? You're crazy. Crazy. Right? Why do we start with the border? Because, one, it's one less piece to figure out. There's a line there. It gives us boundaries. And that's the same with our faith. God, like, we look at it as like, oh, there's all these rules and laws, and it's rigid. It's like, actually, those are the boundaries that keep us in the right area. That's a good thing. I'm not sure about the rest of you, but maybe you've tried to put a puzzle together, and it's gotten so frustrating that you start to cut pieces and, like, you know, use tape and, you know, paste it together. And the puzzle might look okay, but it's clearly not like what it should be like, right? Well, when we start to take our own paths and our own plans and start to like make it work to our fitting, that's what happens. So God's going to reveal himself subtly, and the puzzle pieces that are our life, he's going to help us discern like how they fit together. One of the other lessons we can learn within this is that anxiety that is brought about with these expectations of knowing what we're supposed to do and have a plan and do it right the first time, can actually, that anxiety can be shed from this gospel, this lesson here. Samuel, how many times does he get a prompting from the Lord? Four times. Three times he fails, in a sense, right? He goes to Eli, says, "Hey, I'm here." And Eli's like, "Why are you waking me up? I did not call you. Go to bed." It's not until the third time Eli realizes, like, oh, God's talking to him. Let me give him some guidance. So we're not going to get things right the first time. That's reality. So that anxiety of like, all right, Lord, I gotta know my path right now. I have to know my vocation right now. I have to know what I'm supposed to do right now. We don't. And God's going to subtly reveal more to us. The puzzle pieces are going to get more clear as time goes on. Ultimately, we're going to have others that will help us, which is a great gift. And what we need to do most of all, is just with a courage say, here I am, Lord. Don't really know what you want, but here I am. So that's the first lesson, right, is that God is subtle. And if we respond with a simple, I'm here, things will work out, generally speaking. Secondly, from that second reading, we realize that things have true purposes, that things are meant for different things. Now, when I had done my preparation for this, I read the first line very differently. And I read something like, food is for the body, and the body is for eating food. And I was like, that's not at all what I just heard in the reading today. I'm very concerned. But regardless, things have a purpose, right? And it's knowing what we are truly meant for. So if everything has a proper place and use, then sin is the disordered use of those proper things. That's not, maybe it is surprising, but it shouldn't be. But sin is simply the disordered good, right? Because sin is not creative. Sin is not its own magical thing that just comes out of nowhere. No, sin is a disordered good of the proper things. So when people have the tendency to say, well, my sin doesn't hurt other people, that fact, that idea, that concept is a fallacy. It's inaccurate. And it goes to an even deeper concept, which is kind of foreign, which is that our bodies are not our own. And you might be thinking, that doesn't make any sense because this is clearly my body, it's my skin, it's my flesh. Like, this is me, like, it's not yours. I'm like, you're right, it's not. But who gave us our bodies? God gave us our bodies. And so I think about this, like, you're just renting your body. How's that make you feel? Are you a good land renter? Are you a good leaser? Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. But like, really, like, there's a certain element of truth in that we are simply renting this. So even my body is not my own. Therefore, my sin is never not hurting others, because my sin, in some concepts, is at least going to be hurting God, because it's his body. It's his. He's given it to me. He's entrusted it to me. He's allowing me to be in it, which is good. But we're really just renting this space. So we've been given ownership for a time, tasked with the proper stewardship and care, just like anything else that isn't truly ours. Like, I have the responsibility of the proper care for St. Bernard's, but the priest after me will have the same responsibility. The priest after him will have the same responsibility. The priest after him. And so, yeah, there's things I want to change, like the carpet. This is not a new concept. Everyone knows I don't like it. But why do I want to change it? Because of my own personal opinion? Partially, yes. But two, because it can give greater glory and honor to God if we have marble. Whatever, moving on. But how do we care for the things, right? So if God is subtly revealing things and things have proper places, then what are we doing and how are we caring for them? How are we responding to those subtle discernments, those subtle promptings? How are we caring for these things that are properly good and ordered? Well, Pope Paul VI says this in Lumen Gentium. He says, they, all the faithful of Christ, must follow in his, Jesus's, footsteps and conform themselves to his image, seeking the will of the Father in all things. They must devote themselves with all their being to the glory of God and the service of their neighbor. In this way, the holiness of the people of God will grow into an abundant harvest of good, as is admirably shown by the life of so many saints in church history. What he's saying here, right, is when we respond to the invitation, that's the third part, of those subtle callings, because of the proper order of things, we are essentially following the two greatest commandments, love God, love neighbor, right? And we are growing in holiness. We're growing in that relationship with him. There's another quote I want to share with you. It's from a book by Ralph Martin called The Fulfillment of All Desire. He starts with this whole concept that everyone has a universal call to holiness. That's all of our primary vocation, that we're called to become holy people. He says, what really holds us back from a wholehearted response to the call of Jesus is not anything externally. So, it's not the bad weather and the fact that it's -4 outside, but it feels like it's -21. That's not what's going to hold us back from growing in holiness with the Lord. He says, so it's not an external thing. He says it's the interior sluggishness of our hearts. And I hear that, I'm just like, ah, dang it. That sucks. Because, right, I know the times where I have been sluggish in my heart. And the example I'm going to give has nothing to do with church, but is an example that stood with me since the time it happened. I was 12 years old, and baseball was like my sport. I had played baseball for probably like 16, 17 years of my life, the thing I did the longest at least. And I was 12 years old, and I was in whatever league I was in, and primarily my position was that of a catcher, and we had another guy on our team that was trying to be a catcher, and so the coach would flip us back and forth from time to time, and to be honest, like, the kid was not as good as me. Granted, like, I was not good at other things, right? I was not a good hitter, I just was objectively a better catcher. Percentage-wise, the balls didn't go by me as much, okay? So objectively, I was better at that. But I wasn't getting to play that position as often. I would get put in the outfield at other times, and I was just getting frustrated. And there was a game we had that day, and it was kind of hot, and my mom wasn't at home. My dad had to take me, and I was just like, Dad, I don't want to go. I'm not going to get to be a catcher. It's not going to be any fun. I don't want to go. And he's like, okay, you don't have to go. And so my mom, right, who wasn't there, like, was wherever she was at, like, shows up at the game. Because we didn't tell her we weren't going to go. And they're like, hey, where's your husband and son? She's like, I don't know. Where are they? So she's irate. And she is furious because, like, we just made up some lie, whatever we did. She comes home and she just berates us, justly and rightly. And what I realized looking back on that was, it wasn't the exterior things. It wasn't the heat. It wasn't like the it was the interior part of my heart. My heart was sluggish. I was like, I was being petty. I was being lazy because I wasn't going to get something I wanted, right? And we can look at that in the concept of our faith a lot. You know, it's 9 a.m. It's a Sunday morning. Like, we should be at church. Trust me, last night's Mass was not packed by any means. And if you look around, like, it's a little sparser than normal, you know. And someone even called me this morning. I don't know who it was, but they said, hey, Father, is there Mass today? And, like, I get up and I look out the window, like, thinking, like, did 18 inches of snow fall down and we're, like, snowed in? I look and I can see the road. And I'm like, yeah, there's Mass. And then he asked some other things and I was like, yeah. And, I mean, I was being a little rude. I didn't intend to. But, like, Mass is always going to happen unless I can't physically be here, right? And yet, that question would not have come up last week. No one would have called because of the rain and been like, is there Mass today? No, it's because, like, it's cold and it's, and now granted, like, if you're out in the country and there's a snowdrift that's 18 feet high, yeah, you got to be prudentially safe. Let's just be mindful of that. Like, the Lord's not saying, maybe he is, but he's saying be prudential in the risks you have to take in your faith. So I'm like, am I saying risk your life? No. The Lord might, but be prudential in the choices we have to make. So again, those discernments are subtle. It's a little colder today. Rose may not be so good. Maybe I have to leave a little earlier. Got it. But there's also a proper place, you know. I cannot physically get out. Okay, well, you can't get out. You have to be mindful of that. But what's going to stop us from growing in holiness is not the external things. It's the internal reality of our heart, that sluggishness. Like, again, my laziness in that moment has stuck with me every day since. And so it's probably a reason I am the way I am now. But the Lord, this is our third point, is providing us an opportunity of invitation. When we hear this gospel also came up on January 4th, the Feast of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. And it's an awesome gospel, right? Because John the Baptist, his whole purpose is directing people to the Messiah. And so he says, like, there's the Lamb of God. And so his disciples leave him to follow after Jesus. Like, and he's cool with that because he wants them to know Jesus. So we know as the story goes on, right? Nathan, the brother, or Nathaniel, the brother to Simon, goes back and says, hey, we've found the Messiah. But the one thing in here that I've always, or sorry, not Nathaniel, Andrew, what I have found so fascinating is this one line. It was about 4 p.m. Why in the world would they include time in the gospel? Because I bet for those really significant points of your life, you can remember a lot of details. I bet you can remember the time, the dates, the environment. And so in the moment that they meet the Messiah and their lives are forever changed, they can recall the moment. This invitation, right, is so important because it puts it all together, right? It's all the puzzle pieces. It's all the discernments, all the proper reality of things. God is going to provide help to us, either directly or through others. So when we put that puzzle together, we can start to shed the anxiety knowing that we're not going to get it right the first try, but we're going to keep trying. We're going to keep responding. And as long as we respond to him, we grow knowledge regarding the things that are proper. We acknowledge that my body has a proper place, even though I'm renting it. My family has a proper place, even though they won't be here forever. That the things I do have proper order, even though that's not the end-all, be-all. Even this idea that I mentioned about, like, the baseball game, you know, For my parents, like, that was an end-all, be-all because faith wasn't a priority in our life. Church wasn't a thing that we did on a regular basis at all. And so there was no idea or concept of the idea that my soul and eternity was in danger ever. What was most important was I didn't show up to a baseball game and I embarrassed her. Like, she was embarrassed for a day. But if we really think about it, you know, that embarrassment's gonna leave. But the reality of our souls, that's a permanent reality. So if we see that, and we know the struggles we experience, right? We all have difficulties. We all face sin. We all face temptations. The obstacles that are keeping us away from God are really not the external things. It's not the fact that you're a constant gossiper or a liar or you struggle with impurity or whatever it is. It's the sluggishness of our hearts. It's the laziness within ourselves. And that's sometimes even more piercing and challenging to deal with. Like, I'd rather it be the cold weather that is the problem that makes it for me to go to church than my own laziness. I have no excuse. I live across the street, you know? So I don't have an excuse. Also, they don't have an excuse. They live across the street. So it all ends with invitation. The Lord is saying, like, come. Right? And the moment we say yes, like, that moment should be seared in our memory. Like, I remember the two moments God, like, had more of the lightning bolt than the subtlety, but there's all the subtlety around it. I remember the two moments of, you know, become Catholic, become a priest. I bet you remember the moments of engagement and marriage and the birth of your children and the baptism of them and all those beautiful realities. So I leave you with an invitation. I invite you to come to experience the adventure of Jesus, an adventure that will radically change everything, that is going to be met with difficulties, that will have challenges, that will require us to face obstacles. But he's always going to be there, quietly, you know, moving us. We're going to have people to support us in those realities. And the thing that we need to resist the most is that interior sluggish heart, because God has something that he wants to give us, which is eternal life. He wants us to be with him forever in heaven. And it's just remarkable. It's so cool to think that, like, he wants me, this screw up, this person. And the answer is, yeah, I want you in all of your flaws, in all your weaknesses, all of your strengths, all of your gifts. I want you because I don't see those things per se. I see you, my child. So I just invite you to respond to the invitation that God has given us to be his children, to say yes to him, to resist the temptations of the world, so that we can remember that moment that changed our life forever.